This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of September 28th. I'm John Gibson, and with me as it turns to midnight on Sunday night / Monday morning is Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. It's the midnight hour, and you know what? Not only am I not going to sing it, but I can't.
Oh, thank God. Thank you.
but A, because I can't sing it, because if I did sing it, John would say that's not singing. So technically, I couldn't if I wanted to.
Yeah, that's a wild animal in a trap sound. That is not singing. So yeah, don't do that to the listeners.
John, just for you listeners, John's not always this. Well, he's not always this mean.
This accurate.
Sometimes he's meaner.
Well,
sometimes he's not trying to be mean, and he's just snide. But it's out of love, and I appreciate
exactly.
It.
Yeah, it's out of love. Just know this, people. You don't want any kind of sample size of this thing.
Hi.
A salute to everyone doing their part against.
Yeah, that's a challenge.
In the fight against the coronavirus here and abroad. Thank you very much. We salute you guys. Let's get right to it. On this week's show, We've got a great chat with Tyler Higgins of Oryx. We're going to briefly discuss the Buffaloes. We've got a look at the Pacific League race. We're going to talk about the Giants. And if we've got time, we'll handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, well, on Saturday, I was at my office talking to Tyler Higgins via Zoom, and Tyler was at his home in Osaka. He's a first-year right-hander, and he has never played in the majors, but he's been up and down and bounced around in the minors, primarily for the Miami Marlins and the San Diego Padres, and teammates with virtually everybody in Japan. that's pushing it, but there was one story that he hinted at, and I was kind of moving on to the next one, and it was sort of more of personal interest to me. But he said that one of the pitching coaches at AAA El Paso last year was, he said, the reason he's in a big reason why he's in Japan this year. And that was Akinori Otsuka, who was a former Chunichi Dragon and Kintetsu Buffaloes and San Diego Padres and Texas Rangers reliever, who has a great story and who I'm a big fan of his, and he's a great guy. And every time he is actually now with the Dragons. He's on the Dragons payroll. He's been loaned out to the San Diego Padres for the last 2 years as a AAA pitching coach.
Okay.
So that was interesting. I'm curious to hear the rest of that story. But, you know, Tyler has a real fresh outlook on things. You know, I think a lot of these guys, you know, the stories are the same and the experiences are often the same. But he's just a very, I use the word joyful a lot. Maybe that's not it. Fresh. And he's excited. I found him to be very charming in that respect. So we talked about a bunch of different things, as you will hear. And so I will, without further ado, introduce Tyler Higgins. I apologize. We didn't do the regular introduction, partly because I was recording in my office. And you might hear some background noise. That's my me and my natural habitat.
The Jim Allen enclosure.
Pretty much. They have a sizable moat to keep me away from the kids.
Okay. And some of the adults, for goodness sake.
True. Yep. They've learned their lesson the hard way.
I was just a whole first probably like, honestly, I'm still just now starting to understand it, but it was just trying to figure out what hitters may be trying to do in certain situations that, you know, I can use to my advantage and stuff like that. I mean, It's still tough. It's, you know, everything's so unique and each hitter is obviously different. And I mean, a lot of guys I play in the United States, it's it's not the first time I'm seeing them ever. I've seen them in high A or low A or spring training,
right,
so on. I mean, these guys, I've never even seen video of a lot of them. So it's like first time, you know, understanding what they're trying to do and who can hurt you for damage and who wants to get on base and steal. And I mean, it's just, there's so much, it's just so, you know, so unique compared to what I've been through. So I think that kind of like honestly kept me from overanalyzing, overthinking, and it kind of kept me on my toes a little bit. Maybe I was a little more, I guess, aware of trying to, you know, observe everything that was happening.
That's interesting because, you know, they're in the opposite boat because they're, you know, there's X number of new players in the league, but
yeah,
you know, there's no interleague this year. So it's five teams and you, and I got to ask because you're a reliever, you had these 6-game series.
That's brutal.
When you get into fifth game and you got your face in these guys for the third time in 5 days, what's
there
going
was a
through
point,
your mind?
There was a point where I faced the same four guys three times in three outings of a series.
Wow.
The same part of the lineup. Like there was like one guy here and there switched out, but I mean, there was a time where we had a 6-game series against Cebu and I faced Vandenberg all three times I pitched against him. I faced him and Mejia.
Wow.
I was like, geez, I don't have that many tricks, you know?
So it's just amazing. And people ask me about this, and certainly the dynamic has changed between an American player in the minors and, you know, a fringe player in the majors and Japanese baseball. You know, Nick Martinez told me a couple of years ago when he came, 2 years ago when he came, he says, I've been trying to get to Japan for years. Zach Neal said the same. I want to come. I want to break out of the loop I'm in. You know, I want to learn from Japan.
Sometimes you just need that opportunity.
Is that ever a topic of conversation among guys in the minors? Man, how come I can't go to Japan?
Well, I think, I mean, yes. I mean, honestly, it's talked about a lot more than you probably think. Mm-hmm. It's a great opportunity, especially if a team, you know, gives you, you know, a true chance to come over here and succeed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of players that are, you know, that are willing, you know, to come over here and try and play. But I think the window gets smaller when you look at, you know, a Japanese team's specific needs and what they're looking for, and maybe the way that baseball might be played in the States being a hair off of the culture and the way it's played here. So finding the correct player that will mesh with both is where a lot of guys weed themselves out, I think. And that's just my opinion. I think that there's a lot of guys who could succeed over here.
Right.
If they maybe open their minds to like understanding that baseball is not just played in the United States in the way that it's played, you know, I mean, it's
right.
So I think some guys are just so locked in on like, oh, this is all I know. You know, it's like, no, things are different. Like, yeah, baseball can be played many ways. Like, there's many different, you know, ideas and ideas and stuff like that.
Well, certainly that's true. You know, the media doesn't help that when, you know, baseball is back. You know, MLB, ML, oh, wait, they've been playing in Korea for 2 months and they've been playing.
Yeah,
they're playing
exactly.
Exactly. Now, I want to ask, this is my buddy Ron has a question. I have to read it and try to emulate his intonation because I never get it right. You know, no matter how well I do it, he said, that's not what I meant. So if I screw this up, John, it's all my fault. I'm not sure if it was your first outing, but you came on in a game with no outs and the bases loaded late in the game. And it was early in the season. And how are you feeling? How was that for kind of welcome to Japan moment?
Yeah, that was my first outing. I pitched the day before in the farm league game.
Okay.
And they called me at 11 o'clock at night and said, hey, you got to get to Chiba. And I didn't have any clothes packed. My baseball bags were at the field. I had to do laundry. I didn't get to bed till 2 o'clock. Had to wake up at 5:30, go to the field, get my baseball bags, ride my first time riding a Shinkansen train by myself with no translator to Chiba. And then I had to go through the Tokyo station, main Tokyo station, by myself.
Wow.
I was terrified. And then by the time everything worked out, I got to the field and I couldn't get on the field to play catch. I wasn't allowed to go play catch. So I had to play catch in the bullpen just to like 60 feet. And then I had to come in the ninth with bases loaded and no out. That was definitely, That was a welcome to Japan. Yes, for sure.
Wow. Wow. There's a lot more to that story than meets the eye.
Yeah. That was a crazy first out. I mean, it was my first major league appearance here. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy.
Now, let me ask now after the first time, and as you said, you sort of had to shut things out in order to just focus on what you were doing and shut out the differences. What kind of adjustments have you made to playing in Japan physically and mentally? Because there's a whole bunch of things going on.
Yeah. I mean, physically, I haven't had to make too many adjustments. Oryx has been great with like understanding that I may have different routines than their guys and stuff like, and we try, you know, I talk to our strength guy and, you know, we come to agreement on certain things that might, as long as I don't feel it's going to negate what I'm trying to do, I will never say no. But there's a couple things that I have certain things I like to do to prepare me for a game and stuff like that, that I have just, it's part of my routine over the last 10 years and they've been super good. So physically, I don't think there's been too many adjustments I've had to make, maybe a little bit to my diet, just because there's certain things that I'm not great enough with reading or translating Japanese yet to get certain things. So I got to get better at that, but I'm doing okay.
Okay.
But mentally, I think the biggest adjustment for me was just understanding that I had to knock everything out of my mind and understand that the way the Japanese hitters hit and approach an at-bat is so different for most of them, is so different than in the United States. And I learned that the hard way. I actually was working on a new pitch this offseason. In my mind, I had this idea of what it was going to be and where I was going to use it and what counts I was using. And I got over here and two or three times in spring games, the perfect situation came up. I used it. I hit my spot. I did everything I should have done and I got beat. And I was like, it doesn't make sense. And then I started really breaking it down and looking at it like, okay, maybe it's not me. Maybe it's just that I'm looking at things like an American hitter that breaks his bat, but a Japanese hitter, I mean, their hand-eye coordination is incredible. They just do not like they just foul off. It's unreal. Never seen anything like it. And so I had to knock everything clear in my brain and just understand, like, I had to relearn, you know. And like, you got guys like, you still have American style hitters here, like Yanagita, Asamura, you know, Shonakata, like those guys are still going to try and, you know, take you out of the park. Like, they can change the game with one swing. And that's a lot of the guys in the United States, but there's a 75% of the guys are completely different, you know, completely different oriented approaches. So I had to relearn all that.
One of the things, when you mentioned the pitches is really interesting and the approaches is really interesting. Now, obviously, when you come in, you're not by yourself because, you know, some of the Oryx guys are used to imported players and some of the trouble, you know, the road bumps. But you and Adam and Adderlin were all new to Japan this year.
Yeah.
And you had Brandon and Steven, who knew what was going on.
Dixon was a big help for me. Brandon is a very big help for me. Since I got over here, we play catch every day, and like everything that I have like questions about, or like if something just I need to ask, like to make sure of something, like he has been awesome. Moya, you know, Moya, obviously I don't spend as much time with him. He's a hitter, but he helps Adderlin out because they're pretty close. And then being with Adam, I use Adam as kind of like a backboard to bounce, like, you know, hey, this is what I'm thinking here. Is this right? Is this wrong? Because I mean, he's an encyclopedia for baseball. I mean,
he's not just baseball. He's pretty.
I mean, everything really.
Just knowledgeable. Guys,
he's an incredible human. But I spent a lot of time with him. We've become pretty close, especially over the shutdown. It was me, him, and his brother-in-law were just kind of like hanging out here. We had nothing else to do, so we spent a lot of time together.
Obviously, it's good to be playing baseball. Because if you're back home, at some point you had to be thinking, how good is my timing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have received, countless texts like, you are the smartest man on the planet. I'm like, I've been trying to get to Japan for 2 years. I've been coming, talking to teams over here for the last 2 years, and finally we made it happen and got it done. And I'm just happy about the timing. Timing is perfect, I tell you.
I guess the question, one of the questions I have is spring training is really hard. And I've just started to get into this. Spring training is really hard when Japanese guys go to America because the routine is different.
It's not like terribly different.
Yeah. Because here it's, you know, it's very hard, but there's days off.
The days off are a lot closer together. Whereas so you could go through, like, if you go to a big league camp in the States, I'm pretty sure you get 2 days off over almost seven weeks. I think three would be like a lot.
And that's three between the middle of February and the end of March, pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, exactly. And one of those three is usually a travel day to wherever you're going to season.
Right. Yeah. Here it's pretty much three.
It's a similar schedule. Yeah. It's every three or 4 days you get a day off. Yeah. There was definitely adjustments I had to make, during spring training.
What did you do to sort of bridge that gap between what you were used to and what you were expected to do on the field?
Oh, I will be honest. I did not know how much running pitchers do here.
Oh, really?
And I was very unprepared.
Uh-oh, Josh, you got to tell him, bring the running shoes.
But I figured it out quick enough. It was all right. I got into it. But I mean, it's, for pitchers here, I mean, pitchers in the United States, they have a pretty easy gig in spring training, to be honest. And it honestly rolls a little bit the same way here. I mean, as pitchers, we get our work in, we bust our butts for, the first couple hours of the day. And then, I mean, if you're not pitching that day, I mean, you're done. Like, there's not much else you can do. So spring training in that facet was very similar to the United States. You know, you get your work in the morning, you get done with your stuff and then you're done unless you're in that game. And, as a reliever coming in, you kind of space your outings out. So you're not, it's not really that bad, but the running I had to huck it in a year.
you do that look like, no, you're tired. I'm not tired. Kind of.
Yeah. It's I was tired.
It's you. Our eyes are looking fuzzy. So I have to ask then, did you look at the starting pitchers and think, if I'm reborn, I want to be reborn as a starting pitcher in Japan?
Absolutely. They have the life. That is a good setup for them. The starting pitchers, and they're on a 6 day or 6 man rotation too,
right,
with the 7th day being an off day, hypothetically, depending on how it works. But I mean, yeah, that's a pretty good gig.
Yeah. Now let me ask about the managing change. You got Satoshi Nakajima, who was the manager on the farm team, and he came up, and it's a little, and I don't know Nakajima well. I've known Nishimura for a long time, and he's a guy I really, really like, but he's really old fashioned and kind of old fashioned.
There's definitely a 180 degree difference between managerial styles.
Okay.
You're spot on with Nishimura being a very old school, traditional Japanese style of practice, play, and, culture, tradition. Whereas to, I think Nakajima, he's also, he's got, a good grasp upon the culture and the way the Japanese players like to work. They like to do things, but at the same time, he's kind of bridging the gap into like a little bit more of a new aged, more of an open concept, loose, fun environment, a little bit more like everybody's a little like, exhaled, like relaxed, let's have fun. Like no matter what at all costs, like let's have fun, and it's just a complete 180 difference, in terms of the way that, I mean, you see how we've been playing. We've been very, very playing very successfully since he came on.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, this is a more recent one, but when Oshita came up from the farm team, and
I love him.
He's
the man.
He is like, I don't know what he's like, Ted, he's the teddy bear in the movie jumping up. And I'm thinking,
he's awesome.
If Nishimura were here, he would be, his butt would be glued to the bench.
Oh yeah. He'd probably lose his mind. Yeah. I mean, but that's the thing. Like that's the style, when he came in to be the manager, we started noticing that, a few guys were getting swapped out. And we did notice that there was quite a few of the younger guys coming up. And it was just funny because these guys are coming up and having a lot of success, mm-hmm. And like right away. And so, you know, and it just kind of goes to show you, like, I mean, he knows who was down there. Mm-hmm. He know he was just with them for the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he has guys that he likes, and he's brought some guys up that really, really have been successful right away.
Now, who, you mentioned Yuki Inagita, and he's usually one of the top of the list, but which players have impressed you the most in Japan? They don't have to all be Japanese, but.
I think that Yamamoto, which is my teammate.
Sure.
You know, I heard great things about him before I came over. I mean, like I said, before I even got to Japan, mm-hmm. I had knew who he was. And I didn't know what to expect really from anybody here. I didn't know. He's really impressed me on and off the field. Yoshida obviously is crazy good. He's probably, I think in my opinion, he's probably the best all around hitter in Japan, mm-hmm. in our mm-hmm. side of the league. I really think Asamura is dangerous. Mm. I mean, that guy's a tough out. Yanagita's a great player. He's impressive, but those are all the names that everybody knows.
Sure.
I like, I'm bad with names. I haven't
That's
learned
all right.
the names yet, but the starter that started against us today for the Fighters, their ace.
Oh, Kohei Arihara.
I like watching him throw. Mm-hmm. He's very efficient. He doesn't mess around, throws a lot of strikes. I really like watching him throw. Sho Nakata, he's dangerous too. I like watching him. He plays pretty good first base too. I think I don't know if he's a starting shortstop or something, but Shuto. He's fun to watch. He's fun to watch on the base paths.
He's like,
I mean, I hate when he's in the box when I'm facing him, but he is, I mean, the guy can, he the other day he was playing short and he threw a baseball short hop to the first baseman and the first baseman missed it. And he continued to run and he backed up and got his own ball that he overthrew the first base because he's so fast.
Wow.
Like he's electric.
Yeah.
On the field.
Yeah. I can't believe he just got married. He looks like he's in junior high school. You know,
he does look like he's young. Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are some of the guys that impressed me for sure.
Now, Yamamoto, what is it about off the field, just the way he goes about his work? Or
just, yeah, the way he carries himself. I mean, he's a young guy. He's only, I think he's 22. He's a young guy. He has his routines. He has the things he needs to get done. He gets them done. He really carries himself in a great fashion. And he's constantly trying to better himself. Whereas too, it's not like he's doing his routines, doing his work, getting it done just to do what he does. Like he wants to be better. He wants to get better. He wants to be the best. Like I love it that it lines up every time we play SoftBank that him and Senga pitch against each other. I love that.
The last couple of ones have been really good.
It's like the last three. I mean, it is a battle. I mean, and I think in my opinion, those are the two best pitchers in Japan.
Yeah, I love
it. Those guys, when they start, I mean, that's, you know, that's an incredible pitching matchup, you know?
We've got a lot of good pitchers in Japan right now, and they're so much fun to watch. And I'm so glad you're enjoying this. Now, how about the, you know, how's the strike zone for you? Have you had?
It's okay. I mean, I think I've gotten squeezed a few times as of late, especially, but that's personal opinion. I think the strike zone's pretty good. I think here it's a little different than the States. I think here you don't get the low pitch, but the umps will give you a little bit higher than they would in the United States.
Mm.
And I think it's just a hair wider. I think that if you can get a ball that just scrapes white, I think you can get that call. But in the States, I don't think you get the call.
Yeah, outside, it's sometimes I'm looking. Although I saw Adam Jones got called out on a third strike it was like over his feet, it was in the batter's box.
Yeah.
I saw him going. I marvel at the man for keeping his cool.
Yeah, definitely. Some of them, I mean, they just got to be bad. But I mean, it's human error. I mean,
I couldn't do that job. I have enough.
It's part of the game. I mean, yeah, that's the only job where you start perfect and you get worse throughout the game, no matter what. you can never be perfect.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay, well, it's been a real pleasure, and hopefully we'll get to meet you at the ballpark Well, I'm guessing you might not be in the Japan series.
I don't know. Well, I mean, hey, you never know. Buffaloes are hot right now.
I thoroughly enjoyed, first of all, I enjoy watching the Buffaloes more than a lot of bad teams, teams with bad records, because some of the players are just so much fun. I mean,
absolutely. Absolutely.
The game that Nishiura had the other day against Seibu was just amazing.
Incredible. Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck and good health.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And hopefully the COVID situation calms down and everybody can continue without any hiccups or anything. I know we've had some issues with other teams and stuff. And
yeah.
Our farm team too.
Indeed. So. Yes. Okay. Well, I'm going to thank you for being on our podcast and see you soon, I hope.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks, Mitch.
See ya.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you, Tyler. What a joy that was, and I want to also reach out and thank all the people who were involved in arranging.
Oh my goodness, yes.
This interview, his agent Josh Purcell, who I kidded for it during as we were chatting for not warning Tyler to bring several pairs of running shoes.
Mm-hmm. And, run. Pitcher, run.
That's right. And also several members of the Oryx Buffaloes front office who sort of handed off and played relay and telephone tag and you know, but they got it done, and I'm in your debt, guys. So, John, what would you like to comment on?
Well, I'm going to comment on a bunch of things. I'm going to start about the question I asked you to ask. And, I'm sure when you read the question, you did your best. And actually, I was sure it was his first outing, but I was just too busy. I was too busy to check and make sure because I had to get you the question before you did the interview. And I was, babysitting with the twins.
I wasn't supposed to read that part?
No, you were supposed to read the question. Yes.
No, I wasn't supposed to read the part. I don't know if it was your first outing or not.
No, you were supposed to read that. I wanted you to read that because I didn't check.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't have time to check.
I didn't have time either. So then we were.
But I was 99% John sure. You know why? Digging back into my database.
I'm 60 years old. Everything I think is true. Is true until 10 minutes later when I actually look at you. Oh, you're kidding me.
Right. So, but I was amazed because you had the question in front of you. You were reading it.
Yep.
And then you threw in, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
And I'm like,
that. Well, yeah, that was...
So it just means you started to freelance, which is what you usually do with my questions. You don't read them, you freelance. And that's what it was. It has nothing to do with the intonation. It has nothing to do with the tone. It's the way you reform or butcher or mangle, whatever word you want to choose. That's what I have the problem with. And you were reading and you stopped reading. But you did a good job. I'm going to give you a B+. I'm going to give you 85% on that. You did a good job.
And...
That's
like,
it.
Like I'm listening to you now?
No. No, you did do a good job. So as for Tyler himself, he's bubbling with personality.
Said charming. That's a good word.
Yeah. And he's so engaging. He's so engaging that you even had to sit back and listen. And that's why you didn't interrupt him. I was laughing. I thought, wow, Jim's not interrupting the guest. This is awesome.
I was trying, but, I wasn't trying. I had... some comments. I was trying to get some comments to see if they were valid in the point of his argument, but he was just sort of catching his breath sometimes. He wasn't pausing. He was ready to go to another round.
Right. Yeah. Well, listen, I work with somebody like that every week. Anyway,
Hashtag high heat.
Well, anyway, when he said I thought the funniest line in the interview and one of the funniest lines we've had on the show all year is when he said he had to face the Seibu Lions like three times during that brutal 6-game series. He faced the same part of the lineup every outing. And he says, I don't have that many tricks. I thought that was the most awesome line we've had year.
Well, it's fairly obvious. I mean, I almost expected him to say something like that because mostly, unless you're Alan Busenitz, mm-hmm. throws a lot of different pitches.
And with the Rock Den Eagles, yeah.
Yeah, and I said, you know, you could be a starter with that skill set. And he went, nah, I tried it. It didn't work. But most relievers are coming out of the bullpen because they rely really heavily on a couple of pitches.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, so, I mean, I dug it. I mean,
it's almost a classic reliever line. So I like that.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it just gave us another window, a peek into what it's like to play those 6-game series. So that first game when Tyler went in and he got out of that bases loaded jam, I think that was the series they played against Lotte, and they obviously got swept. I know the interview was kind of long, so I only had two real points about his interview because I loved every minute of it. It was great. Putting a first-year import player, now I don't know if this is just Oryx, but it just seems so Oryx. You put a first-year import player on a bullet train by himself and send him from, you know, Osaka to Zozo Marine Field and expect mm-hmm. him to get there. And now, you know, he said he was terrified, and it literally brought me back to 1990, and it would have been October 31st because I got here on October 30th. Mm-hmm. And it was the 31st that my job said, okay, here's how you get to the office. And they said, you know, good luck. And they said, we'll see you tomorrow. And I had to get on a train and go to the office. And of course I got lost. I went the wrong way. And I had no idea because they didn't tell me how the train system worked or anything. They just said, you know, you could get on here and get off at this station and change and get off at this station.
Were you by yourself?
I was by myself. Wow. So it brought me back to those days or that day and that moment. But he made it. He actually made it.
Which I cheated. Awesome. I was with a classmate from university. We were working for the same company the day we came to Japan.
Oh, wow. Yeah. At least you had a friend. I was all alone. I felt butt naked. But anyway, it sounded odd that a team would do that. I can't say because I don't know if other teams do that or not. But it does sound something odd that Oryx would do. And, you know, I kind of thought. But I imagine some other teams might put some players on trains. But
I bet they would.
Maybe not guys who have just gotten here to Japan. Maybe some guys who have been here a little while, maybe. Mm. Who knows? We'll have to ask.
But Oryx, yes. The whole process, and I appreciate the guys who helped me out in the interview process. As I said, it was kind of a confusing process. I think they had not processed a lot of these. And also because I've given up asking for interviews in Japanese. On the phone, I'll ask in Japanese, but writing, my written Japanese it's so laborious and bad. It's so broken. It's exactly like, but spoken, you know, spoken language I can handle. Not like John, not as well as John, but I can get by. And, but my written stuff, I have zero confidence and it takes me hours and it's painful and scary. So I don't do it. So I write everything in English. Okay. So anyway, the people in Oryx really, they don't have a system. And this is not a criticism of the wonderful people who helped me.
Right.
But the system is not set up. And it's like, you know, at one point they asked me, how do you do this? And because they didn't have a policy in place. And I said, well, some teams do it this way and some teams do it that way. And they said, okay. And people did get in touch with me and people did follow through and people were polite and efficient. But the system with Oryx sometimes, and it has been in the past, and maybe it's better than it used to be, but it has that history of being, I think Oryx, you know, might have inherited that from Kintetsu because Kintetsu was notoriously bad when they merged in 2004. Maybe that's it. It all came from Kintetsu's gene pool.
Okay, let's blame them. But what about the interview was what stuck with you after you did it?
Like, you know, I guess the big thing was, and I say the big thing. But yes, the trip to Chiba, of course, I could relate to that because at one day I was a first-time person in Japan. And another thing was the minor leagues. because we talked about all his teammates, and we didn't include that part of the interview, but he was minor league teammates with Reed Garrett and Zach Neale. And
two Lions pitchers,
of the Lions, and Scott McGuff of the Yakult Swallows, he said, is his best friend. And he goes to the same gym as Drew Verhagen of the Fighters.
Mm-hmm.
And he's next-door neighbors. And now he's next-door neighbors with the Tigers, Joe Gunkel. He lives in the apartment next door.
Wow.
And last year, he was with AAA El Paso in the San Diego Padres organization. And one of his teammates was Kazuhisa Makita.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask him so much about Makita because Makita is a really interesting guy. And also Adderlin Rodriguez, his teammate with Oryx.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was, and he kind of forgot about this, and that was Jose Pirela of the Hiroshima Carp, because they don't play the Carp. So he kind of forgot about him.
Oops.
Oops. Exactly. You know, out of sight, out of mind, I said, yeah.
There's probably just too many. Yeah, you can't name them all.
Yeah. So
remember all that stuff.
So I guess the fun thing was, well, one was the observation of there's too much to deal with, so I'm not going to deal with it. You know?
Yeah.
He's facing all these different guys, and okay, I'm just going to focus on me. Like, sort myself out first. And that was kind of interesting. So I like that. That was kind of new because everybody deals with this confusing situation in different ways. And the other one was, as I said, the minor league bit. And especially when he said that, what I half expected, that there are guys in the minors now who say, when can I go to Japan? You know, actually talking, and these are guys who are ostensibly there to work their butts off so they can play in the majors.
Major leagues, right. Yeah. Well, we've talked about this, and I wasn't surprised. I think maybe the past 2 years, even three, we've been talking about it.
Yeah, we've been talking about it. But yeah. His line was, people talk about it more than you think.
Hmm.
So that was a really interesting. Of course, we talk about it because guys come and say, you know, like Zach Neale, and of course he's friends with Zach Neale. And what did Zach say? I was basically, you know, he was building a boat in his backyard to take himself to Japan.
Well, I remember your Brandon Mann interview, and I think that was three seasons ago, sure. And he talked about how he had been pining to get here and working hard to get here, and I don't think that's new, but I think what's new is that when he says, yeah, they talk about it more than you think. And I can't remember. I did the interview with this player, and I can't remember it as a former Swallows player, and saying that, you know, I was 26. I was no longer a prospect, and I needed to do something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Japan was the place to make that move. And this is 5 years ago. That's why I don't remember. So.
Well, years ago, you did an interview with Jeremy Powell. I think the first post-Japan interview we had with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spoken with him since. And he was then the single-A pitching coach for the Marlins. Now he's the triple-A pitching coach for the Marlins, or he was at the start of this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we asked about that. You know, we asked, we talked about, you know, do you ever say to players, you know, like even on the side or, you know, it's like, you know, your stuff would play in Japan. He said, no, I'll tell them about Japan, but that's kind of not my job to be telling them that there are jobs in Japan. You know,
sure,
I'm trying to get them ready to play in the majors. And so it's sort of taboo.
Counterproductive.
Yeah. Yeah. It's taboo. But so that was the thing I was thinking about. Maybe nobody says it, mm-hmm. but you know they do.
All right, well, let's make a seamless transition and talk about the Buffaloes briefly here. Now, Satoshi Nakajima, the interim manager, I think it was great to hear in the interview about the relaxed atmosphere he seems to have created for the team, and I like that. But do you notice the guys starting in games, excluding the pitchers, the starting pitchers? Seems like 70% of them now are guys who used to be on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad that you both touched on Seiichi Oshita. He's like the oldest looking 22-year-old rookie I've ever seen. I think he's a chunky dude. He's got a DH's body, and I think the first two or three games he played, he had a batting practice pitcher's jersey on because they were playing in those old Blue Wave jerseys.
Right, and they were playing in specialty jerseys, and
they couldn't just throw a name on the back with a number. They didn't have one. So he played in a name. What was it? Yamaoka.
First name forgotten.
Yeah, I don't know. I could look it up, but I didn't. I didn't have time. But anyway, I thought that was really cool. And I love the way Tyler spoke about his energy, about Osta's energy. And I have a nickname for him. He's got a powerful little swing. Like I said, he's got a DH's body, but he's just got so much fuel and energy and power. So I'm going to call him Juice.
Okay.
Because he's got all this, like he's on the bench. He's one of the most active guys. I mean,
I don't think he actually sits.
He doesn't seem like he's sitting down. Somebody gets a hit, he's jumping around, he's clapping, he is Juice.
I mean, he's doing the home run celebration for other people's home runs. He's out there on the bench gyrating, and yeah, again, not a surprise for me because, as you know, I'm a big fan of hiring the minor league manager. And as Oryx said, when Nishimura stepped down, that had been the plan, that Nakajima was in line to manage, which remarkably sounds, is contrary to our idea that Oryx has no plans. So that's
interesting. Yeah, but I like seeing the young guys get a chance out there. They've been playing fairly well. Adam Jones came back up today, and they won big today. And Yutaro Sugimoto, the big masher, had a couple infield hits, I think, on Saturday. And they've got a new kind of fresh kind of attitude. Mm-hmm. And who knows how they're going to finish in the standings during this term that Nakajima has. But I don't think it's that important. I think it's important that they do what they do, which is play hard, have fun, like he said, and make the game fun for the fans as well. And mm-hmm. I think they're doing that. And I think if they close out the season with a decent record, that Nakajima will be around for sure next year, and that they'll compete a little bit better just because, I don't know, just like Tyler said, look, it's fun. The environment, people are not uptight. And maybe that was part of it. Maybe that was part of what the losing came from, that people were just too scared to make a mistake because they were going to get sent down to the minors or whatever was going to happen. I don't know.
That certainly happens sometimes, that guys were sent down
for making mistakes.
And again, because it's Oryx and they're not explaining things, so we don't know. Maybe there was a good reason, but sometimes they just... Nishimura's a guy I really like. He's always been very kind to me, but
their previous manager. Yeah.
Yeah. But he's a little old school. It's the way he does, you gotta be who you are. And I don't, can't blame somebody for, if you are what you are and somebody gives you a job, I mean, they knew what he was when they hired him. I can't
hopefully him.
Well, that opens another can of worms, I suppose.
Yes, it does.
a can of buffalo something. But they knew what he was when they hired him. And this reminds me of one of my favorite player acquisitions back about 27 years ago. The Kintetsu Buffaloes signed RJ Reynolds after he'd played 2 years with the Taiyo Whales in Yokohama. Mm-hmm. And then they fired him. And he did exactly what he did in Yokohama. He was exactly the same player. And then they complained that he wasn't the player they thought he was. And maybe that's the Kintetsu DNA. I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah. Yeah. It's, Yeah. Mystery, but maybe next year. Yeah, maybe next year.
I was interested. You know, I guess we could see that. As I said, I think if Oshita were on the team, he wouldn't be jumping up and down. He'd be looking over, you know, instead he'd be looking over his shoulder.
It's possible.
So
it's possible,
that's my impression.
Yeah.
And okay, so I wish those guys the best. And as I said to Tyler, I do enjoy the Buffaloes are an enigma because they get bad results, but I still enjoy watching them.
Yep. Yeah. You are correct, sir. I got nothing more to add to that. They're compelling, and yet you know, I don't even know if they're lovable losers because they've lost so much. Like I said, in past years on the show, when you don't expect them to do well, they seem to jump up and do well. But when you assume they're going to just be the same as the previous year, then they
That's
jump up and win.
That's a hard one for them, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move along and make a two-seam transition, talk about the Pacific League pennant chase. And wow. At first, you know, Rakuten had the sweep of Lotte earlier in the week, and then the Eagles packed their bags and forgot to bring their game with them, and they went out to Tokorozawa and had trouble out there, losing that series. And meanwhile, the SoftBank Hawks came to town and played their nemesis, the Marines, and they lost 2 out of 3 to the Marines. And now the game difference is 1. And I can't even believe I'm saying this, but I'm going to start to be a believer because the Marines don't go away. They win these close games. They win easily sometimes, and they're just hard to beat. And even when you've got them down and you think the game is wrapped up, they still find a way to get guys on base and have an opportunity to win the games late. So they're really – this it's like a badger, these Lotte Marines. You don't want to fight them, but you have to get where you want to go. And they make it hard. They really make it hard.
I have to wonder – and I alluded to this. I get to use the word alluded again just for that purpose. I alluded to this last week that the Marines just seem to have a SoftBank thing. I think they, I don't know if they look past, you know, I don't, were they looking past the Eagles at the Hawks coming up? Because it's almost like the purpose of their season is, their purpose of their season is like when I was a child and I thought the San Francisco Giant, the purpose of their season should be not to win the pennant, but to beat the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Right.
You know, yeah. that would make my life complete because it virtually never happened when I was growing up. So, and almost you wonder if that's, you know, if they've got all their energy and attention and they put it in one bucket because they make the Marines and they make the Hawks look really bad.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem to matter who's starting on either side, who the pitcher is. It can be, and apparently Manabu Mima, who won today's game, has four wins against them this season alone, and is in the past has just kind of owned them sort of. And going back to last year, this season the Marines are 10-4-1 if you want to count the ties, but 10-4. And then last year, 17-8, they beat him. So that up, you guys can do the math. So, yeah, I got to believe this. This is the biggest thing that I wanted to say is if these are the first, you know, these teams finish 1-2, I don't really think the order matters. I don't think if Lotte is playing at Fukuoka PayPay Dome that the Marines are worried about playing there. And I don't think if SoftBank is playing at home that they're confident against playing against the Marines at home.
Yeah, but here's the other thing.
In a playoff series.
Sure.
A mini series. It's going to be really short. Yeah.
Sure. But, you know, the Marines, the Hawks had a thing with the Fighters a couple of years ago. I want to say it was 2017 or maybe it was last year. The year before last. I don't remember. But they had a thing with the Fighters. They couldn't beat them in Sapporo.
Right.
And they really didn't do well against them. And then they came to the postseason and they're like going, hey, hold on, who check the rearview mirror. Who did we just run over? So I don't think I think you're right. I don't think the Marines are going to be afraid of them because obviously they beat them up pretty good.
No, I think they're going to be confident. They're going to say, yes.
I think, yeah. I thought you said the Marines aren't going to be afraid and the Hawks aren't going to be confident.
Yeah. Okay. I probably did.
Okay. So I don't think I agree with you. I don't think the Hawks or the Marines are going to be particularly concerned because they have a history of beating them. But having said that, I also know the Hawks are just, you know, I'll just say they're such a better team that I think when it comes to this is the one team we have to focus on. They're going to look for, you know, what's left after the series will be an oil stain.
Well, you know, you would assume that. I always say you can be good in everybody's heads, but you got to be good on the field or the playing surface.
True enough, and the Marines are good on the field, so it's not like it's on paper. It's not like they're good on paper, but they're not getting results.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But again, you know, it was criminal, you know, how badly they beat up the Fighters in the postseason, and it looked like they'd never beat them ever. So, yeah.
Well, it's a sexy matchup.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's definitely a sexy matchup. The Lions, I don't, as much as I think that they have some more oomph and they can push their way if they just get on a hot streak, I just haven't seen the pitching. They haven't been consistent scoring either, but I haven't seen the pitching.
That's one of the interesting things about the Hawks is, or I guess one of the surprising things about the Hawks early on was Akira Niho. You know, the guy we were going like,
right.
Huh? What? Why is this guy the sixth starter? And he was really good. His fastball was crisp. His splitter, he was commanding his splitter. And now it's like, you know, we've seen this before. Somebody's really good. You know, they draw. And I don't know if this is the exact way, the scenario, but you know, the Hawks draw up a plan for him. He works on the plan. He executes the plan and then people adjust. And okay, the plan's not working. Guys, the plan's not working anymore. You know, it's kind of like he needs a bigger boat. He needs some help because the Sharks are getting to him. And the last few times, you know, that he's pitched, it's like, yeah, this looks like the guy who, you know, this looks like the journeyman that we were all surprised to see. So maybe that is time for him to, you know, to get a new role in the Hawks rotation because
I wasn't going to blame one particular guy.
I'm not blaming him because he was playing over. He was executing wonderfully, far above expectation.
Yeah, not my point. My point was that the team, and I think I emailed you during the week and mentioned it, but the team just seems to play poorly every September. Now I know that's not the case, and I believe this at the moment. In September, they're only one game under 500, which isn't bad. And Lotte is one game over 500, which isn't great. But it just seems like they're losing more games than they should or more games than usual. And it seems like every September they go through this slide or swoon or slump or whatever you want to call it. But that's not the case, you said.
That's the they've had
an image, right?
They, you know, 2016 was the one where they definitely did.
Right.
And 2015, they went into a slide after they won the pennant. So their end result was really bad. I mean, the last 3 weeks of the season was just a dumpster fire because they didn't have anything to play for after they wrapped up the pennant in the middle of September.
Right.
So, although that was called a call, I remember Dennis Sarfate calling that a collapse, but you know, we knew that really wasn't the case. But yeah, historically it hasn't been bad. It was bad in 2016 and it cost them the pennant when they played they played 500 in the second half, but that's stretching it. They were over 500 in August and they were under 500 the rest of the way after playing 600 something in the first half. But historically, actually, they've been very consistent. second half, first half.
That's what I mean. It just seems that way because we've seen it a few times and it's in the memory banks. And so it's September again and it's happening. Yeah.
I mean, in 2013, actually of course, it's hard to remember that they lost the last two pennants when then they went to the Lions and just again
smacked them around when it really counted. Yeah.
Hit and run. The Lions were looking for license plate numbers. What?
Right. Was that a bus or a truck or what?
I know. So it's almost like, yeah, pennant, what pennant? Who cares?
All right. Making a four-seam transition, I'd like to talk about the Central League now. And last week, we were going to talk about the Giants, and I think we just got off topic, and I never really got to say the things I wanted to say. So let's revisit that this week.
Okay.
And kind of focus on thinking ahead and looking at the Japan series. So obviously, their magic number is 24 as we speak here on Sunday night / Monday morning. And I just, as I said before, have very little faith in the other Central League teams, and they're just kind of floundering there. I think the fight is definitely for second and third place. Other teams want to finish in the top half. They don't want to be a bottom half team. And that race should be interesting with the Dragons, the Tigers, and the Bay Stars fighting that stuff out. But the team that wins is going to go to the Japan Series. There's no playoff series as there will be in the Pacific League, where the three-game series, right, in the Pacific League. But I'm looking at the Giants, and I started to look around and say, okay, they're playing some young guys. The one thing I wanted to mention that I didn't get to mention last week that he almost ruined it for me because he had such a good week, and that's Hiroyuki Nakajima, who's kind of been I don't even know that he's a retread because he had been kicked around. He's one of the guys I think we didn't mention in our kind of, you know, renaissance comeback guys, because he really hadn't played. He didn't come out of the COVID break as the first baseman. And, you know, they kind of put him there and we said, oh, isn't that cute? You know, that was my attitude. Oh,
yeah, they're just leaving.
Yeah, they're putting a veteran guy at first base to get a veteran glove out there, get a veteran presence along with Sakamoto at short. Okay, yeah. All right, I can see that. And he has been a nugget for them. I mean, he's hitting well enough. He has made some plays at first base. It's not like, I mean, this is a former shortstop. And he has made some plays out there at first base. He's scooping balls. He's, you know, grabbing line drives that are headed down the line. He's playing a good first base. I mean, he's not great, but he's not bad. He's at least adequate. And he's hitting enough, and they lost to the Dragons on Saturday, but Nakajima had this two-run single to get the score tied late in the game. I think it was the eighth inning, and then in the top of the ninth inning, I think the Dragons is one or the other. I think either top of the ninth or top of the eighth. The Dragons got a home run and ended up winning the game, but Nakajima has been good for them. So I wanted to look at their rotation because obviously we know the likely Sawamura Award winner, Tomoyuki Sugano, is going to start game one for them. But I'm just curious as to how they construct their rotation as they go through the Japan series, because I don't know that any one of these guys is different from the other. The guy we saw today on Sunday, Shosei Togo.
Yeah, he was about
still young.
Yep. Yeah, he was
still young. I'm not sure if he gets game two. And then Angel Sanchez, do we give him game two, or is it CC Mercedes, or is it somebody else?
I think, to be honest, it's going to depend on the health of Mercedes.
Mm.
Because when he's healthy, he's definitely, I think, the best of that bunch, at least the most established one of that bunch.
Okay.
But having said that, Shosei Togo, the admiral, I call him. Yeah, his stuff today. Now, you know, even when I've seen him pitch badly, he hasn't been really bad.
Okay.
You know, when I've seen him get poor results, it's more a case of, you know, kind of a typical pitcher's thing. You know, they hit your good pitches, and then you're trying to force it, and you throw bad pitches and make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that today was a case of, okay, first of all, they're playing the Dragons, so he a lot of his mistakes were basically guys looking at pitches or getting bad swings on good pitches.
Mm-hmm.
But they did hit. They did hit a couple of pitches that were. His fastball tends to be straight. He gets a lot of spin. It has a little hop on it that was giving him a lot of trouble. But it was more like locate the fastball and kill him with the splitter, and then you know take a chance on the slider. And manager Tatsunori Hara says he really needs the one thing he needs is a slider. If he can be consistent with his with where he puts his slider, then he's basically just. People will be sort of like saying, maybe let's hope we don't face him in the next series.
Right.
But of course he was at the top. I thought he was kind of at the top of the game, but boy, he throws hard. Again, he doesn't have run on the fastball, but it's got, you know,
he's got velocity.
It's got that hop. It's got the spin and the hop when it's good. And, I like it. I like the look, for this year. And he's a 20-year-old kid, and wow, he's got some stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then Sanchez has pitched well, and you know, there are other guys out there who can maybe get the start, and they can just yank him early. Yeah,
Taguchi is a guy who's a mystery to me because he was really good when he was Shohei Togo's age.
Yeah.
And now he's, what, 25 or something, and he's sort of like, you know, he looked the other day like the guy we saw 5 years ago, but he's been very inconsistent, and I have to suspect injury issues or something. But having said that, it's sort of like, you know, the problem for the Giants is, yeah, exactly as you said, Sugano's number one, and then we got a jar full of cookies. Which cookie is the best?
Yeah, I don't know. That particular time, yeah. Yeah, so that should be interesting to see how they work through that. And you know, we haven't had, I guess they were the last team to win a Japan series from the Pacific League. I can't remember the year.
Oh, to beat a Pacific League team, 2012, they beat the Fighters. They won the last two, 2012 and 2009, excuse me. They beat the Fighters those 2 years.
I'm glad you had that in your head because I was looking through my book and I didn't see it. So good. So if anybody has a chance to do it, obviously from the Central League this year, it's the Giants.
Yeah.
But it should be fun. So I hope to, you know, keep an eye on that and keep you guys informed as we move forward. But I see headaches in the postseason for the Giants if they,
you know, sure,
two guys doesn't really step up and start.
I think headaches anyway because their postseason is straight into the Japan series.
Yeah,
and
waiting around. Yeah,
exactly. They're going to be waiting around and they're going to be playing a team which. And here's the thing with the Central League, they're going to be playing a team that on paper, because they've been playing against, you know, the Pacific League teams play against the Pacific, you know, looks the same. Oh, they're good too. And then they get into the Japan series and they realize they're not, you know, that they're competing all year against it. I have to say it. I don't like saying it. Maybe I do.
Maybe you do. But
the Pacific League is a better league.
Yeah.
And I have to, you know, one question I'll ask myself is how far down in the Pacific League do you have to go before you get a team that wouldn't beat the Giants in five games in the Japan series?
Well, I'll tell you this, and I don't know, I guess we have to take a survey or something. Maybe I'll throw one out. I wonder how many people would rather see a Central League team win the Japan series or see the Hawks win again. You know, and obviously that question comes down to the Giants and the Hawks. Do you want to see the Giants beat the Hawks or do you want to see the Hawks win again? And
I want to see a good Japan series. Even the last one was, of course,
we're not asking you though. We're asking the people what they want. And right, I'm thinking that's why I'm thinking Lotte is like a sexy choice.
Sure.
I think it's kind of a fresh look. There's a lot of guys to root for. Say Inoue finally, you know, reaching that kind of status that a lot of people expected of him, and just a lot of good stories there with Lotte. So I think they're easier to root for. It could be the people's champ.
I think I would.
it's a good story.
Yeah, they're all good stories. And of course, the Giants having lost last year against the Hawks would, you know, it'd be a rematch, would be fun, although it wouldn't give the Giants very many, you know, good odds in that. But I think the Eagles-Giants, a rematch of 2013 would be fun. The Giants and the Marines have not ever met. Giants and Lotte have never met in the Japan series, so that would be a first that for those two franchises. So,
yeah, I could get behind that, seeing that first time. Yeah, that'd be fun. All right, making a one-seam transition, we want to bring back or just talk about the COVID situation that happened with Han Sheen this past week. So there was obviously a cluster, kind of an outbreak of positive tests for coronavirus among Han Sheen Tigers players this past week. And I saw a GG News Service alert. I tweeted it out right away. The players who were mentioned at that time were Yuta Iwasada, pitcher, Kento Itohara, an infielder, Kosuke Baba, a pitcher, and another infielder, Naomasa Yokawa. And then later on, Masumi Hamachi, a fourth-year right-hander, was also added to that list.
Well, actually, he was the first one.
he wasn't on the first list that I saw, so saying he was the first.
Well, the reason is he was announced the day before. And okay. He had developed some symptoms, and so he got tested on Thursday, and so all the Tigers were ordered to take tests on Thursday, and that's when they discovered the other infections.
So yeah, so they ended up deactivating a bunch of players and activating some others and just going on with the games. And I think we saw this back in March when Shintaro Fujinami, the F word, was tested positive along with some minor players, Hayata Ito and Kenya Nagasaka. And that all they did was separate him from the team and they marched ahead. So they did the same here. They separated those guys from the team, changed them out, and charged ahead and played that series at Jingu against the Yakult Swallows. And obviously a lot of people thought, oh, they're going to get swept because they don't have as much talent, but they really hung in there. They played tough games. They won tonight, so they didn't get swept, but they did lose 2 out of 3. And, you know, when I saw the whole thing go down, I kept thinking, well, that's why I want to discourage all this hugging and celebration stuff. And you guys have to remember this thing is highly contagious. You just don't know who has it. And some guys can get the same strain and develop symptoms, and others are completely asymptomatic, but they're spreading it. So you just got to be careful.
Yeah. And the Tigers were not careful. And
obviously,
first of all, the rule is they do have rules. And in one case, so the infections, apparently we don't know when they happened, but Hamachi, the minor league pitcher, pitched one game last Saturday, this past Saturday.
So the 19th, wasn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it was the 18th that he pitched. And the 19th, they had a party. They had a dinner party in Nagoya after their day game. And he was in a private room. They're allowed to eat. They're allowed only to go out. This is the Tigers' rule. Every team has separate rules. Okay. The Tigers are allowed to go out in Hiroshima and Nagoya. Not in Tokyo, but in Hiroshima and Nagoya, they're allowed to go out and eat together, provided they're in a private room and there's no more than 4 people. Okay, so Hamachi was in a small group in Nagoya, and one or two of those people also tested positive. And then the 2 others were in a group of 8.
Ugh. Yeah, it was the 19th that he pitched.
Okay, it was the 19th. And maybe it was the same. He was called up on the 18th. He pitched on the 19th. And that night was the night in Nagoya where they went out in a separate group at a different restaurant, had 8 people, and some of those guys tested positive.
Yeah.
So I guess one lesson is, A, follow the rules. If there are rules, follow them. And B, even if you're really, really careful, you can get it because of other people who are less careful and just bad, you know, being in the wrong place at the wrong time. So don't increase your chances by doing something. I don't want to be pejorative here because, you know, I'm not better than you people are, but try not to be careless because it could ruin your life.
Or someone else's.
Yeah. So that's, you know, and guys, stay safe. All the listeners, please stay safe.
All right. And speaking of that Jingu series, something strange took place on Saturday night, and I'd never seen or heard of anything like this.
God, these things happen at Jingu.
Well, let's tell people what happened.
Okay. First of all, you know, we had events. One of the things that's interesting is with smaller crowds and fans being told not to shout or chant.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you can hear the players and you can hear the coaches. Well, they can also hear people in the press box.
Which at Jingu Stadium is right behind the screen, behind home plate.
Yep. And you don't have to tell the story about me and the foul ball. Okay. So anyway, there was a play at home plate in the seventh inning on Saturday night's game in which there was a tag play. And the runner was ruled out, and somebody shouted from the press box, "He was safe," who was looking at a monitor.
Okay.
Now, the Tigers requested a, you know, they did the request.
For a replay review,
they asked,
right?
For the DJ to play something or something. And they got a review of the call, and the umpires upheld the out call. It was a very close play. And after the eighth inning, the umpires, after conferring, went over to the Tigers bench and said, "Listen, you're not allowed to have people helping you. You're not allowed to have outside help. You have to make the review calls on your own. You can't have people in the press box telling you what's what, after, you know, from watching on TV."
Right. And I had this game on and I was sitting there actually listening to the Tyler Higgins chat and trying to clean it up and doing some editing on that. And so I was half listening to Tyler and half listening to the announcers, and they had no clue what was going on.
No.
And neither did I. And I saw a tweet that said there were fans who were talking to Yano, the manager, and that the umpires said, "Don't talk to the fans." And I'm like, wait a second, that's not a thing. You know, you can talk to fans, you can look at fans, you can do whatever you want. That is not a thing. You can't, the umpires can't tell. And then it turns out when I got to this office today, I looked on our database and looked up the story that we ran, and it said, oh, it was a reporter who was speaking to one of the players.
Well, it was somebody in the press box. Yelling out
to the fan. That's what our report said.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just weird. It's just weird.
Yeah.
So this is a weird year.
Indeed. Well, the reason I mentioned this happens at Jingu was in March, the announcers, because there was nobody in the stands, and the TV box, which is about 50 yards from home plate, the announcer was speaking very loudly and saying, the catcher is setting up inside.
Right.
And the guy at the home plate could hear it.
Yeah, I remember
so they
that
had to
too.
Tell the announcer to shut up, and and then we had the fan at Koshien did that. A fan at Koshien did that when fans were a couple of days after fans were allowed back into the ballpark on the 10th of July. A fan was behind the back net saying, "He's setting up inside."
Well. And I don't see next year where we're going to have full capacity, but I imagine if we can get, you know, flatten the number of, flatten the curve, we can get the number of infections to go down. I would imagine we would at least be allowed to have half capacity at all the stadiums. And that probably would eliminate something along those lines. Although I don't think we'll have the music back yet next year. So it's still going to be a little bit quiet. All right, let's go to fielding questions. Okay, so we're going to do a quick one. We've got a couple in the bag here on deck, but we're going to hit one today, and we'll get to the other ones next week. Paul in Calgary via email says, I see there are some managers in professional soccer who have never played professionally. It seems every NPB and MLB manager are always former players. Will this ever change? Jim, look into your crystal ball.
Well, first of all, I have to say I wasn't aware of any professional soccer managers who are not professional players at some level. And I find it really hard to believe because professional soccer goes much deeper than professional baseball does. Very low levels. But we do have things like, you know, the manager of the Japan Football League, which is not technically a pro league. They have pro players. The manager of Suzuka is a Spanish woman. So obviously she didn't play professional football in a men's league, but she's a manager. Okay, so that's that aside. We do have history of MLB managers not having been baseball players, but that's a long time ago. I don't think so. I think, you know, the closest we'll get is having guys who never played in the majors. At some point in Japan, we may have a manager who never played on the first team. But that's we have had guys. We have Hall of Fame managers. We have two Hall of Fame. Well, one I'll say one Hall of Fame manager who basically he played in 100 games in his career, I'd be surprised. And that's Toshihiro Ueda, who managed the Hankyu Braves and Oryx Braves and Nippon Ham Fighters.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking into my crystal ball and I'm thinking, having been in a locker room, I mean, I played basketball, so it's a different sport, but I think it's the same principle because I would get very frustrated with a lot of the referees when I was playing basketball because they didn't play, it seemed. They had no understanding of what the moves they were seeing were, and that was my thing. That would be my thing with a manager who takes over a baseball team having never really played professionally. Yeah, you might know how to teach, and I think a lot of times, even though there's not the position is more of leadership than it is teaching, but I think it's important, it's imperative that the manager say, you know what, you're doing this wrong, or you be able to spot it and also teach and give that advice. And when, you know, because what I'm imagining is some guy with his little computer and his, you know, his calculations and computations and all these other things coming down and trying to manage a baseball team. And you're talking about grown men who are trying to feed their families. I don't think they're ready to listen to somebody who's just full of analytics and numbers. I think somebody has to have the experience of, okay, you know, I've had this kind of success. I've made these kind of adjustments and I'm still not having success. How do I get out of it? And I don't think a numbers guy can, I mean, that guy would be the zebra who gets kicked out of the horse convention. I don't think he'd be respected in a locker room. And so I just know that for me, I want a guy who says, you know, I saw you shoot your free throw and you did this, and I saw you take this shot and your shoulders weren't squared to the basket, or, your release was bad and that's why you missed to the left or to the right, or this is why you keep missing long. I want that guy to be able to see that instantly and explain it. And I don't think that's a numbers guy, and I'm just imagining it would be a numbers guy. I don't know the scenario that you're thinking about, Paul.
A quick bit on that. I think the key word there is not any sort of pejorative thing about people who know numbers, but rather respect. It is very,
yes.
Now, if you know, but you have to also realize what you're saying is exactly what people said in the majors 30 years ago about people who had not played baseball having jobs in baseball.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about people having jobs in baseball. I'm talking about the manager on the field.
I know you're not.
I,
What I'm saying is what you're saying about a manager is exactly what people said 30 years ago about people not having playing experience having anything to do with baseball.
Yeah, and I think that those people who don't have playing experience but have a lot to contribute and are contributing. I just don't know that they can lead. They can be in there. I'm not sure that they can lead.
I would bet there is somebody who could do it. Of course, you could have college coaches come in and do it for sure. So definitely, we said professional baseball. Oh yeah, could happen. I think it would be a college coach most likely. But having said that, I think it could happen because the key thing is respect and leadership. And I think you have to ask, not can he tell you what's wrong with your fastball or tell you that this is a mechanical flaw,
mm-hmm.
but does he get the job done in the big picture? You know, does he have, is the team getting that information? Is the manager making the right decisions? And if the answer is yes, then who cares? But I'm just saying, there is always a possibility to a sort of a different kind of manager. I think that's possible. So I think it could happen. But I guess the most likely scenario is you would get a guy who maybe played college ball, or of course we've also in America we've got Hall of Fame managers who never played in the major leagues.
Yeah, a guy or a woman. I don't even think it matters. You know,
I don't think so. Yeah. I would think, Jessica Mendez could probably be a major league manager, and she never played professional baseball. So.
Baseball, yeah, but she knows. Yeah, she knows
exactly. And, so that's one thing. I mean, there's that other one is the gender divide, but I think it could happen. I think there could be somebody who's basically, he has people on his staff who can do the parts, and they trust him, and he's a good leader. And he's good with
he or she, people. Yes,
he or she, and I think it's conceivable. I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening in Japan, where pretty much you have to be a star.
Yeah,
and one of the reasons why I love the hiring of Hajime Miki as a manager, because he's a guy who was
for the Eagles. Yes,
of the Rakuten Eagles hiring of Hajime Miki, because he was such a non-star. Until him, it was Hideki Kuriyama was probably the manager with the least, but at least a Hideki Kuriyama was a regular for a couple of years with the Yakult Swallows. Miki was always basically a sub and a reserve and a coach. So it's growth that they're opening doors. And if that guy pops, if that woman pops up and does the job, okay. And speaking of opening doors, I want to give a shout out to the DeNA BayStars. They have hired the first female athletic trainer in Japanese pro baseball.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! And I know that the...
her name!
Hayashi is all I can say. The DeNA social media account was not very helpful otherwise, other than saying, throwing a little video of her working out with the team in Yokosuka. But
okay.
I know the Hawks had the Hawks general manager Sugihiko Mikasa had told me he wanted to be the first. So the Hawks aren't always first.
Yeah, you can't just say it; you got to do it, bud.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly. So we're not just going to say it, but we are going to do it and leave.
All right. Well, we will do some more next week. We'll talk to you then. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com or hit us up on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at JBallAllen.com.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. Be sure to send in your questions with hashtag High Heat, and you'll hear from us again next week.